coming up on this week's mini episode of the Drew Perowit Podcast.
And so what the studies actually show is that tooth decay is actually a deficiency in calcium in the mouth. It's not actually just the the stickiness of plaque on teeth or the overproduction of acid from certain bacteria in the mouth. It's actually the lack of calcium.
So if I had to pick one supplement that's made the biggest difference in my overall health, it would have to be magnesium. This super mineral is needed for over 400 different enzyme reactions in your body. And this is the thing, because you know I'm obsessed with sleep. It's so critical for your sleep, plus your heart, brain health, your muscles, and so much more. When you don't get enough magnesium, you can struggle with things like muscle twitches, insomnia, palpitations, constipation, migraines, and the list goes on and on. I personally started taking magnesium to help my sleep, especially when I travel, and it's been a game changer. But I don't just take any old magnesium. I take BioOptimizer's Magnesium Breakthrough. It contains seven different forms of magnesium, which all have different functions in the body. I haven't found anything else like it on the market, honest to God. Magnesium Breakthrough can help reduce cortisol and stress, and it promotes deeper relaxation and helps with even anxiety. I have so many friends reaching out to me saying that they feel infinitely more relaxed after they incorporated some form of magnesium supplement into their routine. Now, one of the reasons I specifically like BioOptimizers is because their products are soy-free, gluten-free, lactose-free, non-GMO, free of chemicals and fillers, and they're made with all natural ingredients. So right now, if you're looking for a magnesium, BioOptimizers is offering my community a few special bundles. Just head over to magbreakthrough.com/Drew with the code Drew10. That's magbreakthrough.com/Drew, DHRU with the code Drew10, DHRU10, and get your BioOptimizers Magnesium Breakthrough today. Hi everyone, Drew Perowit here. The biggest misconception when it comes to tooth decay is that it's an infection of harmful bacteria, in large part from eating sugar. But the thing is, it's not. And there's a growing body of evidence and advocates that are trying to bring out this important message. Tooth decay actually results when the body doesn't have adequate fat-soluble vitamins, which causes an imbalance of the oral microbiome. In this mini episode, I speak with Dr. Stephen Lin and Dr. Rosita Rashian about the connection between our oral health and our overall health. We discuss how tooth decay is a condition we can prevent and how we have the ability to heal cavities and reverse tooth decay in certain circumstances if we get involved early enough. That's the key, getting involved early enough. We also talk about root canals and what you can do to avoid from having one. It's a great technology that we have at our disposal, but you'll see why Dr. Rosita Rashian especially wants to make sure that her patients, as a dentist, absolutely do their best to avoid having a root canal. Let's listen in, starting with Dr. Stephen Lin, a world-leading authority in the field of functional dentistry and the author of The Dental Diet, The Surprising Link Between Your Teeth, Real Food, and Life-Changing Natural Health. So complete that theory of what you know now contributes to the tooth decay.
Yeah, it's a very disparate picture, and it actually speaks to how we disconnect the oral medicine with systemic medicine. And so the evidences that we understand with diseases in the mouth, they are very disparate from what medical doctors are treating patients with systemic issues. And so that problem starts to, it really disseminates through society. And then so you have the functional medicine community that looks at root causes and starts to think about why lifestyle, habits and diet and so forth, affect and cause chronic diseases. But dental diseases are very much the same, and they're actually connected. And so when you start to look into how functional medicine and how, understanding nutrient deficiencies and so forth begin to play into, you know, what we see in the mouth, it all starts to paint together. And so it actually goes back to another older text, which I based my first book on, Weston A. Price. And he went around the world and he looked at what happened with traditional diets and what happens with modern decay. And he found that as soon as we move ourselves off traditional diets, we begin to see dental diseases. This happens in the anthropological records, and it happens in modern populations as well. This was in the 30s that he was doing this. And so what he did was he looked at the differences in foods, and he found that there was a specific lack in fat-soluble vitamins that arose which caused the rise in decay. So up to 30%, which is the modern rates that we see decay, and they're going up now, once we remove these factors from our diet. And so what he was talking about here was vitamin D and the fat-soluble vitamins. And what we've learned in the last, 20 to 30 years is that vitamin D that we absorb through sunlight, but we also get from food, is a primary manager of minerals in the body, so calcium specifically. And it's how we absorb calcium. So when we're vitamin D deficient, we don't absorb calcium in the digestive system. So you can eat as many foods as you like with calcium. So, proteins, plant-based foods with calcium. If you don't have vitamin D, you won't absorb it. It'll fall straight out of you. And then it's the management of these minerals. So calcium itself, how it gets into your bones and teeth. Now, vitamin D is a hormone regulator. It regulates our DNA. And so what we now know is that there are thousands of cells all over the body that are listening, that have vitamin D receptors, and that are listening to the vitamin D in our body. And so when we're vitamin D deficient, we have an overall message to strip minerals. And this is kind of just the surface level as to how our diet, how our vitamins, and how our endocrine system manages the nutrient balances in the teeth. And recently, so in the last 10 years, what really kind of opened my mind to this was what we're understanding about the microbiology of plaque. So we mentioned before that plaque and calcium interact. So the reason why you get that calcified plaque built up on the back of your lower teeth that your dentist cleans off. Now, there isn't a good physiological explanation for that. So the dental community says it's due to poor oral hygiene, but actually it's due to the body not managing calcium. And we know that there are proteins in the mouth that carry calcium into bones and teeth. And so these are fat soluble vitamins that work synergistically with vitamin D. And when vitamin D absorbs calcium, it needs these other nutrients, which is vitamin K2, to carry calcium into bones and teeth. And so what the studies actually show is that tooth decay is actually a deficiency in calcium in the mouth. It's not actually just the stickiness of plaque on teeth or the overproduction of acid from certain bacteria in the mouth. It's actually the lack of calcium. And so what bacteria will do is they move into teeth to strip the minerals, which is what tooth enamel is. It's frozen minerals, calcium, phosphate, and the bacteria actually need this. Calcium is involved in every physiological process in our body, muscle reactions, cell reactions, brain reactions, and bacteria need it as well. So we're actually seeing an imbalance in the way our body is moving minerals around.
But if somebody today was noticing that they went to the dentist office and they were noticing that they're starting to get a little decay, maybe not like a full blown decay, I don't know the proper terminology in dentistry, but there's a little bit of decay that's starting to build up on a tooth that's there. Would you still recommend following your protocol? If so, can you walk us through that? And it's so personalized, but as a whole, do you think this is something that could still potentially help them reverse this decay?
Yeah. So when you go to the dentist and you have an oral examination where they take x-rays and they'll do an intraoral exam, if they identify a lesion, what you'll be able to identify is the depth of the lesion. So that's how that we generally class, the severity of decay. So if the, what happens is you get a shadowing on the x-ray. And so if that shadowing stays in the enamel, that's generally called a class one, the class two lesion. These lesions can be remineralized. So that means it's not broken. You may not even notice it's there, but the dentist will pick it up. Now in these cases, I mean, we know the conventional dental treatment of that would be, to put topical fluoride on that. And the issue with fluoride is that it will harden the enamel, but it won't necessarily change the underlying issue that caused the decay. So if you have a lesion in enamel, you can very much, you know, be of the mindset that this can be remineralized or reversed. If it's into the dentine, now you're getting to the zone where the decay is getting closer to the nerve, and there becomes risk that if you just leave it, you can get an infection of the nerve. And so you really kind of have to work with your dentist in that sense and understand the risks and so forth, and, you know, make those decisions. But if you have an enamel or an early dentine lesion, there may be, you know, a zone where you can, you know, enact some lifestyle change to see. And what you can do is you can go back in 3 to 6 months, take new x-rays and check if the lesion is remineralized, because you'll see this on the x-rays. They'll actually increase their radio opacity or their whiteness on the x-ray. And if it's remineralized, and you can put them side by side. So you want to work with the dentist with this, because without that, you don't have any feedback. You just don't know what's happening. But so all the factors that we're starting to talk about. So where, if you have this lesion, you need to be thinking deficiency. I think, you know, across the board, my patients that have tooth decay, I recommend they go and get a vitamin D deficiency test. And so this checks your blood levels of vitamin D. Now, the issue is that there's a lot of detail with blood levels of vitamin D. You can have sufficient levels and sometimes that doesn't work. Or some people have low levels and it takes a long time for them to lift up. Supplementation, we remember that supplementation needs to be activated into its active form in the body. So the version of vitamin D you take via supplement form has to be activated again. And then that's the version that activates all the gene receptors throughout the body for vitamin D. So supplements are it's one aspect to this, but knowing your vitamin D levels when we have a lesion is very important. And then we can supplement alongside, but then dietary, you know, we need to replace these foods. And so foods like rich in fat soluble vitamins, such as cod liver oil, if you can take a desiccated liver capsule, you know, for people that aren't going to go out there and cook liver themselves, you can take a desiccated liver capsule and, you know, take 4 to 6 of them a day with cod liver oil. And then you can test your vitamin D levels to see if they're lifting up after 3 to 6 months. And then within that, you know, if you're getting x-rays on the lesion, we can start to see if we're seeing some changes in the enamel. Other factors to think about: vitamin K2, which comes in same as organ meats. If you eat these foods, you're going to get a broad spectrum of these nutrients. You can also supplement K2. It comes in two forms, the menaquinone 4, which is the animal sourced one, and the menaquinone 7. The menaquinone 4, which is the animal source, is more active in the body, and the menaquinone 7 comes from fermented foods like sauerkraut and other vegetable ferments and so forth, some dairy too. So you can supplement both of those forms too. If you take a D3 supplement, you should always take a K2 supplement. And one of the things that people, not many people are talking about now is vitamin A. So you get vitamin A with cod liver oil, but vitamin D deficiency also, vitamin A and vitamin D work together. And so if you have an increase in vitamin D, it increases the need for vitamin A in the body. So if you take a vitamin D supplement, we should really be thinking vitamin A as well. And you can get these from natural food sources like organ meats, but you can also supplement as well. And so these things work together. And then the thing that catalyzes all these nutrients are magnesium. Magnesium is a mineral that we don't talk about. It's actually within the tooth structure as well. So you need to be getting a lot of magnesium for all of these nutrients to work. And if you take enough vitamin D, but you're magnesium deficient, it won't work. And so magnesium itself is a mineral that sits along the outside of the structure of the calcium phosphate tooth mineral. And if you're magnesium deficient, your vitamin D receptors won't work. The kidneys will actually remove more minerals from your body because we're deficient in these in calcium and phosphate and magnesium. And so you have to get a lot of magnesium. So I think, you know, today, because of the way food quality is stripped out, we don't get enough magnesium than what we used to. So soil's quality has gone down. So people supplementing vitamin D, K2A, and magnesium makes a lot of sense in terms of making sure that you're getting enough of these nutrients. And then, you know, making sure you test, you know, you can test your D levels, you know, check your symptoms with magnesium. Sometimes you can get, you know, digestive symptoms, like you can get where your stools become quite loose and so forth. You know, you can titrate that depending on your you know, on your symptoms. And then things like ferments, so like oral probiotics, so things like kefir, things like fermented vegetables. These things replenish the oral bacteria, and we want to be replenishing the oral environment in order for it to be able to regenerate. And the other thing that we talked about before is that bone, before bone is made, it's a collagen matrix. So the body lays down amino acids, and then it calcifies those amino acids. So for tooth structure to remineralize, you need collagen amino acids. And these come in foods like bone broth, from the joints of animals, from the skin, from you can take a collagen supplement. But I think it's really important if you're trying to remineralize some cavities in your mouth, you need that precursor for bone. Otherwise, your body's going to be trying to pull these amino acids where you're in deficiency. So when you put these things together and you take, you know, regular interval x-rays, you can potentially manage lesion. You may see certain lesions remineralized. You can take photos of them. A dentist will often get intraoral photographs of them. And so it's possible. It does happen, but you have to be very careful. You have to you know, understand all the different risks and know that if a lesion goes too far, you can get a quite a bad toothache that can end up in an infection.
Root canals have become ubiquitous. Almost 60 million are performed each year in the United States alone. You need a root canal is now almost as common as hearing you need a filling. It is the only treatment and protocol available to retain a tooth that is deceased. Yet just how safe are root canals, and what are, if any, the better alternatives available? My next guest, Dr. Rosita Rashian, is a biological dentist and surgeon. And by the way, she's my dentist in Los Angeles too. Her focus is on holistic and biological dentistry, the philosophy recognizing the teeth and associated structures as part of the whole body, not as something separate. In her practice, she uses minimally invasive techniques to preserve healthy tooth structure and incorporate laser technology and ozone therapy. Dr. Rashi and I discuss the deep controversies around root canal, why some people do end up needing them, and the four factors that we can do, that we have control over, to avoid having a root canal in the first place. What is a root canal?
So root canal is a procedure that is done by a general dentist or an endodontist who happens to be a root canal specialist. And basically what that means is once they find that a patient has pain and they announce that the nerve is damaged and they cannot heal it, they try to save the tooth by just removing the damaged nerve from the inside of the tooth, which basically means you're not extracting, you're not removing any part of your tooth structure. You're going to have it as whole, except the nerve inside the tooth that is acting up and is causing pain or is sending a message to brain, hey, I'm uncomfortable, there's an infection there, or, you know, there's pain going on. They remove that nerve and the blood vessels. So in another words, it becomes a dead tooth, because as we know, any part of our body, if you don't have blood supplies and if you don't have nerve intervention, it's considered dead.
Right, because so, it's not getting oxygen, it's exactly. Not getting nutrients. It's almost like chopping off your hand from the rest of the body, but still sewing it and kind of keeping it attached, but none of the nerves like or anything is going there. So now exactly. You just have this like dead hand.
So this procedure has been practiced for many years, and patients are happy because they get to keep their teeth. And if
and
they
that's
have
the primary
pain,
motivation, right?
That's the
they want to keep
motivation.
Their teeth.
Exactly. Now that thankfully, most people can afford dentistry as opposed to past, that even if there was a small cavity, people would adamant about pulling it or removing the tooth rather than filling it. People can afford dentistry. They're more conscious that they want to save their teeth. So they go to any grounds possible to do that. So root canal is one of those things. So everyone is happy. I don't have pain. I get to save my teeth. But at what cost? This is the part that majority of the people don't know. What happens when you have root canals? So again, this is the only area in medicine that we allow, and that's just because maybe dentistry and medicine was so separate for so many number of years, that we allow a dead part or dead organ to actually still stay in the tooth, in our body. So let's use an analogy. When someone has uncontrolled diabetes and there's a poor circulation to their appendages or fingers or toes, if they don't improve that and you cannot reverse it, then the poor circulation causes the dead tissue and then ultimately leads to amputation of their leg. They don't get to keep it. And why is that? Because anything dead in the body collects bacteria. Bacteria releases a toxin which could affect your general health. So we know that for the rest of the body.
And it's well established in many areas.
Exactly. Except in dentistry, somehow we find it okay that it's all right to have a dead organ, the tooth structure in the body. And as long as the patient does not have pain, that's okay. So that's the standard. That's the criteria of a successful root canal. Does the patient have pain? No. Or if we take a two-dimensional x-rays, do we see a lesion? If these two answers are no, that's automatically a successful root canal.
And just to add to that a little bit more, is that not only is it the only area, but also people still think of the teeth as not living. The teeth are living.
Exactly.
They're living, breathing things. They're not just like a piece of bone that's sticking out of you that is not attached to anything, is not doing anything. It's not just this solid structure. It's living, it's breathing. It requires regular nutrient supply. Like, it's an actual thing inside of our body.
100%. Absolutely. And so again, going back to that criteria of not having pain, I like to use that as use an analogy that a lot of times, a lot of circumstances, we don't experience pain, but that doesn't mean there is not something going on in our body. Let's use cancer, for instance. No one wants to have cancer. That's the word that terrifies everybody. But when someone is on stage one or a stage two cancer, oftentimes they have no pains or symptoms. In fact, that's why a lot of times cancer goes unnoticed until accidentally somehow it's found. People that are lucky that at the early stage we find them because of this routine screenings that they do. Otherwise, it's not due to pain. But does that mean cancer at stage one or two is allowed, or is that okay? Is it okay to keep it once you find out you have cancer and not do anything about it because you don't have pain? Not so. So why is it okay to have a root canal that just for the sake of, well, it's not causing pain on the patient?
Right. And so the connecting the dots is basically when you have this root canal, you're basically severing the tooth from these nerves that are there.
Exactly.
And now the patient feels better because they get to keep their tooth, but they no longer have pain.
Right.
Right. But what you're saying is that just because you don't have pain doesn't mean there's not something that's lurking there. Just like my mother, who is also a patient of yours, when she was diagnosed with breast cancer, it was early, knock on wood, was caught early. She had an incredible team of doctors to work with her. But even though she was early in stage one, she didn't notice anything. It was only because she felt a lump. There was no pain. There was nothing that was going on. So the connection you're making is basically just because you're not having pain doesn't mean that there's not something that's a larger health issue to address there.
Right, which could have an overall impact in the future or cause an issue in the future. So
can I ask another question?
Absolutely.
Let's even backtrack a little bit further. You know, so much of your work in dentistry is preventative, right? Help us to a place where we don't even have to get there. So, you know, I can understand why somebody comes in and goes to their dentist and says, listen, I've just been having this tooth pain. It's been days, turned into weeks, turned into maybe months, and people aren't going to the dentist, or they go to their next checkup, and then dentist decides. Now, what are ways to even, like, why is that? What are ways to even avoid that happening in the first place before we talk about all the things that can go wrong when you have a root canal?
So how do we avoid root canal? Very good question. So there are four factors that I have in mind. that three of them are very much in the control of the patient. It's unavoidable. It's very much avoidable, excuse me. There's only one factor that is unavoidable. So the first factor would be nutrition, diet, proper diet. So if you're having, if you're consuming sugar refined carbohydrates and causing change of pH in your mouth and creating an acidic environment, so that's one of the factors, because the acidic environment can cause the enamel to become more soluble, hence more prone to cavities. Second would be the bacteria, your oral hygiene. Do you get your routine dental care? And who establishes that? Is it based on, I hate to say, your insurance companies that says everyone gets a cleaning twice a year? Does everyone's body functions the same or has the same need? No. A dentist has to establish a guideline and a time range for you to get your proper dental cleaning. Now, everyone in my office has its own formula because everyone's body's need is
different. Personalized health.
Absolutely. Someone has medication. Someone, the salivary flow is different. Their diet is different. Their hygiene is different. Their orientation of their teeth is different. They have certain habits. They play certain sports. All of that is a factor that one has to keep in mind and establish for bringing the patient back, how often they have to come back for dental cleaning. So we make sure we are in control of the bad bacteria of the mouth.
Right, because we've talked so much about gut health, and there's also these other areas. There's your oral microbiome,
exactly,
right, which is what you're talking about.
Right.
There's a nasal microbiome.
100%.
There's even some evidence of the microbiome inside of the brain, which is being more established that's there. But your oral microbiome is just as important as your gut microbiome.
Exactly. So those are the first two factors. Third would be patients that have certain habits of, for instance, clenching and grinding. Number one, we have to find out what's the source of it. What's the reason for the patient that is clenching and grinding? Until that's established and hopefully taken care of, we need to prevent the damage, because you can have the best hygiene, you can have the best diet. However, if you clench and grind and put so much pressure at night and you wear off your enamel, your tooth structure, you are weakening the tooth structure and you're getting yourself to potentially at the risk of either breaking your tooth or causing hairline fractures. Now, through these hairline fractures, again, bacteria can travel inside the tooth. A perfect tooth can end up with a root canal for no reason. We see that often a lot. Patient that is a clencher and a grinder has gone unnoticed or without treatment for a number of years, and they ended up needing a root canal just because of the hairline fractures that was on the teeth, and unfortunately is irreversible now.
Yeah, it's like basically like every time you sit, you're sitting on your arm instead of just sitting on your backside, and your arm is twisted. You keep on putting pressure. Eventually there's going to be some sort of break or
exactly
a snap. So that's happening there. And that's really interesting because, you know, there are different interventions that can be brought into that. One is, you know, looking at whether or not somebody's breathing through their mouth at night, and there's some interest in that growing category of mouth taping and addressing that.
Right. She talks about in previous episodes.
We've talked about previous episodes. And there's also, like, I've found that, you know, in my own life, I came and saw you at a time where I was going through, I live a very stress-free life, but I was going through something in my personal life at a time where I was having a lot more stress than normal. And I didn't think it was affecting me during the day, but it was definitely affecting me at night. And not only was I grinding my teeth, but I also was biting my tongue. I came to you and I said, I'm like weirdly biting my tongue at night because of this grinding that's there. And you had recommended some interventions, including at the time, you know, Invisalign was one of the things, like a mouth guard that was customized towards me.
Right. Well, some cases is the occlusion or the way the teeth come together is a factor, and that makes them a grinder or more prone to clenching and grinding. Jaw structure, the shape of your jaw can dictate that. That's why we get that. It's genetic. It comes from our parents. So a lot of times when a patient is a grinder, either 50% chance one of the parents was a grinder, because they get the anatomy of their jaw from either of their parents, or any type of stress in the body that could be lifestyle or pathogens or anything that is going on and you're under stress, you automatically have that reflex of clenching, grinding your teeth. So we need to find, again, the source of the problem. Hopefully the source gets to get eliminated, but if not, at least until we get there, there has to be some means of protection so the teeth don't get damaged.
Right.
Now, the fourth factor, which unfortunately is out of anyone's control, would be any accidents. You know, if you somehow fall and you have a hit on your face, you break a tooth, that was something that was unavoidable. So then if you have a nerve damage or you break your tooth, you may end up needing a root canal at that point. So this is the only section that is like bad luck. You couldn't prevent it. It happened. But the first three categories is very much in your control, and you can control that, which is the major part of it, actually, because accidents doesn't happen every day. But what you will consume, how we take care of our oral health, this is something we can control on a daily basis.
It's an exciting time because all of the science is showing us how influential both diet and lifestyle are on our health and our teeth and our mouths. This all means tooth decay is a condition we can prevent. Even more, we also have the ability to heal cavities, potentially reverse tooth decay in certain circumstances, and even prevent having to get a root canal, which is so key. If we want to continue learning how to optimize our health, we have to stay open-minded for all the new research that's emerging and questions the status quo. Dental health is a great example of this process. So thanks for tuning in to this week's mini episode of the Drew Pruitt Podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. Who's somebody that's struggling a little bit with their dental health? Could you forward them this mini episode? It just might make their day. Thanks for tuning in. I'll see you next week.